Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 120.
This week on the podcast, apparently the power vacuum we created by bombing Iraq can only be solved by bombing them more?
This week on Hillary Pillory, Hillary Clinton is already campaigning to lose the 2016 primary by ragging on those damn Democrats and their foreign policy plans.
And the Ebola outbreak is both our worst nightmare and not at all a danger if you're an American who has not recently been to Liberia.
Chris McDaniel finds voting irregularities in the form of seeing black people at the polls and claims Cochran race-baited.
And the GOP would like you to believe that repealing the medical device tax will solve all your problems. Nothing like having your finger on the pulse.
Amateur Hour continues at USAID's covert Cuba spying headquarters.
And the NRA is blind to the issues with arming blind people.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And then you'll know where we are.
That's it.
The internet.
That's right. Oh man, well it's like it's 2003 all over again, everybody.
In all ways.
Time to bomb Iraq again.
Yeah, I would venture a guess, which is that we have not stopped bombing Iraq since the early 80s.
Well, that's the thing. Obama is now he sort of took over a war, but he is now the fourth president to sort of like, you know, initiate.
Preside over bombing Iraq.
Because both Bushes did, and even Clinton did once. It was a short campaign.
But I remember
it. Like a targeted, you know, bombing of Iraq. So, yeah, I mean, since the late 80s, we've been at this.
It's been a nonstop. Well, and we have been doing it consistently since then. Because even after the first Gulf War, we didn't stop bombing Iraq.
No.
We just started bombing them on a more consistent basis in a predictable way.
In a strategic way.
Yes, instead of just like all out bombing whatever we damn well please.
The fact that we're still doing it would lead me to believe that potentially it hasn't been as quite as strategic as we would maybe have wanted it to have been.
That is an important point, I think.
Right.
Like the level of strategy here has not been ideal.
Right. Now, this is an interesting one because, you know, this is all to do with ISIS is what we're sort of like getting at now. Because they have been, you know, we've been talking a lot about they're sort of like been on their march, you know, through the country, basically. And they're taking
They're being strategic.
They're being strategic. They're taking over land. They're like, you know, really, they're doing it right.
Right.
Sadly,
they're doing the worst possible thing right.
Right. It's not what we want.
They have come up with ways to take areas by cutting off resources, by taking strategic cities that are on their way to important
places. They've been capturing dams so they can control, like, waterways and things. I mean,
which
like
in that area is a
and the border.
Major
I mean,
thing.
Another thing that I think is that, you know, we're talking about, like, you know, bombing Iraq right now, and granted, yes, that's what we're doing, but Iraq and Syria is sort of borderless at this point.
Yeah, there's just chaos on that border.
So it's really just sort of, you know, one country of
chaos.
Chaos.
A leaderless country.
It's two countries. Yeah, exactly. Leaderless, right? Exactly.
In all respects.
Yeah. So anyway, they are now sort of like marching into, you know, the Kurdish territory, which is like in northern Iraq.
Right.
And that, the Kurds are real allies of ours there. And they are sort of like,
The Kurds are also, like, really fucking scary. Like,
well,
they don't fuck around.
No, they don't fuck around. And they are sort of, like, who you can count on, like, in that region. Because the Sunnis and Shias, they are just sort of, like,
fair weather friends.
Right. At best.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
And, but the Kurds, they have the Peshmerga, which is, like, their own sort of, like, fighting force. And they sort of will, you know, the U.S. can sort of, like, count on them when, like, something needs to get done. They're, like, the older sibling there, sort of, like, in a way. Like,
they
can be counted on.
Are a heavily armed population that has had to fend off attack from all sides for, like, all of history, basically.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
They're sort of crazy, but they're crazy in a more predictable manner.
So, ISIS is heading into their territory now to pick a fight with them, which could be a real situation, and it has turned into one.
Yes.
So, also, in this area, in Iraqi Kurdistan, is this group of they're called the Yazidis, and they are like an ancient religion. There's like less than a million of them on Earth.
Right.
They like are rooted in Zoroastrianism,
right?
Like from real ancient times, like they
like
and like some early
Mesopotamian
religion,
stuff, yeah.
Right? So they live there, and that sort of like has worked out for them because sort of like the Kurds don't really care that they're there, and because the Kurds have this fighting force, it sort of has been like a safe place for them.
Right.
But one of the things that ISIS is up to is sort of like, you know, purifying Iraq. That's sort of like what their stated goal is. So they're not trying to have a bunch of early Mesopotamian religion people who are like worshiping some peacock god or something, which is what the Yazidis are up to.
Right.
So they have all fled the area and like went up on this mountain where they had like no food or water.
It was like 120 degrees on this mountain.
Yeah.
There was no water.
Right.
They were sort of surrounded on the mountain, so they couldn't get off the mountain.
Right, so they're like stuck.
And basically, ISIS just waited them out. They all just started dying of, like, heat and dehydration.
Yeah, and they also, like, took a lot of, like, apparently they killed, like, at least 500 of them, we're saying now. And they also, took a lot of, like, women and children into, like, slavery and were raping them and just, like,
stuff.
Really sick stuff.
Not what you want.
No, not at all. So that is sort of how we got into this sort of bombing situation now.
Right.
And I think it's sort of, I think that on some level, we have probably been looking for, like, a good reason to get involved in, like, dealing with ISIS and bombing them. And I think now, under sort of, like, because we're also going in with, like, with aid for the Kurds and the Yazidis.
And they finally have opened a corridor up to get the Yazidi off the mountain.
Right.
So
we can sort of, like, go in and bomb ISIS and some strategic places here, sort of, like, under the guise of a humanitarian effort.
Right.
So I think that is...
Right, well, there was, like, this weird thing this week where there was, like, a false alarm, and someone announced that we were bombing them, and then the Times wrote that we were allegedly bombing them, and then the State Department said we weren't doing that, and then the next day we were anyway, so it was, like, a whole... There was, like, a lot of confusion earlier this week about whether we were or were not bombing them, and then once we started bombing them, Obama was like, well, we don't know when this is going to end or what our plan is, really. We're just sort of playing it by ear, like, it's...
Yeah, he said this is not going to be a short mission.
Yeah.
So,
and no one's clear on what the mission is or what the goal of the mission is, because other than stopping ISIS, we have no plan.
Right. I think on some level,
which is probably a better
probably
place to be,
what it is. I mean, I think to some degree, I think he probably wants to just eliminate them as a threat, which there's not ultimately that many of them. I mean,
that's true.
I think
also,
that could probably be done. I mean,
this is
I don't
like
know
they
that's
are
the
sort
is,
of
but.
Stepping into a vacuum. A power vacuum in Iraq because the government there has been having a hard time keeping a lid on things because they're not really there's not really this like great Sunni Shia like you know government cooperation that there was supposed to be and so everyone just sort of hates each other at the moment
right.
So part of I think the issue is that there's no real way for us to have it's not like every time we go in and determine who the leader should be we fuck everything up
we can't really
do that
and I think this was always one of the major concerns when we went into Iraq in the first place, and people
is
on the left...
A power vacuum there is a very dangerous thing.
And people on the left were calling on, you know, Bush when we went in there, like, what is the sort of, like...
What's the plan?
...political endgame? Like, we can go in there and turn the country into a parking lot and not find weapons of mass destruction until the end of time, but what do we do then?
Afterwards.
And the answer was apparently...
Nothing.
Nothing. Leave a giant power vacuum for someone who's too crazy for Al-Qaeda to take over.
Yeah. No,
because
exactly.
Because that's what...
That's what happened.
Who these people are.
Yeah.
They've been denounced by Al-Qaeda.
They're
that crazy. And the same thing is what happened in Syria on some level because there was all of the instability there. And they're just sort of like, you know, when there's instability, it leaves vacuums for groups like this to take over.
Yeah.
So, and
that's sort of one of the most basic principles of foreign policy and local policy, even.
Right.
Like, this happened, you know, I wrote a HuffPo piece about this at one point. It's my favorite thing to talk about, as a matter of fact, is what happens when you leave a gossip vacuum.
Yeah.
Because people fill it in with their own information, and it's not always correct, and you can't do anything about it.
No.
Because if you haven't provided the correct information, people will just spread whatever they damn well please. And this is sort of like the same at a government level. If there's no sort of legitimate authority in a country and you destroy the sort of legitimate structures of government, then what you're left with is a big gaping hole for crazy people.
Yep.
You know, that's...
And here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
Crazy city.
Now, Hillary Clinton has some ideas about this.
She certainly
does.
And
she agrees that these power vacuums are sort of how we got into the situation. And
doesn't see the connection between her own vote to go to war in Iraq and the power vacuum that has resulted.
And she also, I don't think, understands properly how to not have one of these power vacuums.
Correct.
I think that she's... I am really pissed at her.
She's currently towing a John McCain line of reasoning.
She's
on foreign policy.
She totally is.
That man thinks the Cold War is still going on. Like that.
Yeah.
He's not who you want to be listening to.
Yeah. She did an interview this week on foreign policy, sort of like the most you know, lengthy
it's
interview
her coming
that she's
out,
done.
Her, her coming out foreign policy interview for her presidential run that's going to be destroyed
as
before.
As a Republican.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, because she even gave it to, like, one of the sort of, like, moderate right Republican, like, foreign policy experts from
well,
the Atlantic.
Well, she still is ascribing to the Clintonian principle of really going middle ground or nothing at all.
Yeah.
So she's doing it.
Right. But she, this week, denounced Obama's foreign policy.
Real smart move.
Real smart move. Like,
don't do that
when you were the Secretary of State and he's still the sitting president and you're going to be running for re-election and you
on
need the people who...
On his fucking platform, basically. I mean, you're going to be running on a continuation of his policy.
Yeah.
You're not running against him. He's not running.
I think that she's
she's going to try and run against him.
Right. Well, I think that she probably on some level sees where his approval numbers are and realized that, that on some level she's going to have to.
Well, there's a difference between running against him and running against the Democratic platform.
Right, that's... No,
currently,
you're absolutely
she's
right.
running against the Democratic platform.
Yeah,
he is just sort of like the general embodiment of the Democratic platform.
Yeah. But she thinks that the whole reason that this ISIS situation is going on right now is because we failed to arm the rebels in Syria.
Yes.
When we were having that big Syrian situation, there was a lot of debate about what we were going to do there, and John McCain wanted to arm the rebels, and he went over there and
then took his pictures with the wrong people.
Right, remember? Like, we didn't know who to arm. That was the whole problem.
Yeah.
And she even, her quote, I think, backs this up from the story, because her exact quote was, "The failure to help build up a credible fighting force of the people who were the originators of the protests against Assad, there were Islamists, there were secularists, there was everything in the middle. The failure to do that left a big vacuum, which the jihadists have now filled." She's absolutely right. But she just listed, like, six different groups.
Right.
Who were... Did she want to arm all of them?
Are basically indistinguishable from the jihadists at the beginning of that battle.
Right, exactly.
Because we didn't know who any of them were, and everyone was had multiple allegiances. And
right.
No one really understood what the emerging situation was.
Right. So would she...
arm everyone.
Did she want to arm the Islamists, or the secularists, or everyone in the middle? Or if she wanted to arm all of them... Then what
that
happens
sounds
now?
Like arming everybody.
Then we have a power vacuum where all of those groups are fighting with each other.
Exactly.
And then you still have ISIS going
right.
on. So I think that she has just proven that she's a fucking twit.
Yeah.
Because this is not the solution.
I'm not
saying I have it, but it's not that.
No, well, and this is a strategy we have tried and failed at before. Arming militants in any complicated political situation where there is a breakdown in the power dynamics never works out correctly.
No,
first
never.
Of all, there is no armed opposition group that is just a moderate group.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as armed moderates that are like
no.
trolling around countries trying to take over so that they can be more moderate and pragmatic.
No.
That's not happening anywhere.
No.
The only people that you can arm in these situations are extremists, because extremists are the only people willing to martyr themselves for their country.
Yeah.
So like, get your shit together, A.
Yeah.
Like, this is about creating sort of structures of government that are sustainable,
yeah.
that are credible to mm-hmm. people. None of these people are credible. None of the people she just named are credible options
no.
for anything.
No.
They're just a bunch of crazies roaming around with guns that they
with
either
that
got
you've
from...
Armed.
With that you've either armed or that the Russians have armed. Somebody has armed everyone there anyway. The
yeah.
whole fucking region
We're
is
armed.
So, like, it's not like there's a lack of arms going on in the region. But, like, the only thing this creates is more armed, like, wacko groups.
Yeah.
Which is how no one has ever been able to sort of create, like, a sustainable rule there without being, like, a crazy dictator.
Yeah.
Is because all of these crazy rebel groups are armed with the Americans and Russians and
right.
every other person who has an interest in oil in the region and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing is just, like, this plan hasn't been working for
no.
decades.
Right. The only plan that was working was the Saddam Hussein plan.
Yeah. That plan was working. And that's unfortunate.
Right.
But, I mean, that was sort of like...
Right,
that,
because he was an evil dictator.
He was an evil
I'm
dictator.
Not trying to
we get
say
it.
That
he was
like
a Stalinist.
Right.
We're not
right.
claiming that he wasn't. But it's just sort of like that at a certain point when you are irresponsibly having to bomb a nation for the last 25 years, just
yeah.
nonstop, like, you want something to work out where you're just like, all right, things have calmed down.
Yep.
We got it.
Yep.
Like, let... There's a point at which you stop arming rebels in regions and you let people work stuff out within their own nation. And I get that to some degree that's impossible in the Middle East because everyone has been armed by everyone for so long
yeah.
that there's, like, no way to sort of, like, get rid of that culture of, like, crazy militant groups, like, running
yeah.
around shooting everyone. I mean, like, the whole fucking region is armed with machine guns, so, like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
But, like, they've got to break the cycle somewhere.
Yeah.
This is not gonna ever be a good plan. So
no.
it's like, let's not start it again.
No.
That's terrible.
No, not at all. Of course. And then also in this interview that she did, she, like, really went, like, bringing all in on support for Israel.
Well,
of
she's
course.
Buddies with them. She Unlike is, Obama, yes. who sort of has a slightly tepid relationship with right. Israel, she has a long tradition right. of being, like, militantly pro-Israel.
Yeah. And she also really sort of, like, talked up American exceptionalism, Ugh. Which is another, you know, right, Gross. Right-wing sort of talking point, basically. And then also, you know, the Obama foreign policy doctrine, a lot of people sort of, like, say that he doesn't really have one on some level, and, like, it's, he has jokingly said, like, of recently, at least in the last few years, that his foreign policy doctrine is don't do stupid shit. And, she really, like, threw down on that, and she was like, that is not, she said, great nations need organizing principles, and don't do stupid stuff is not an organizing principle.
I would argue that it's a defensive principle after someone had a lot of organizing principles that were incorrect.
I was going to say, is, like, her organizing principle do stupid shit?
Do stupid
shit,
exactly. Like, because I think that he said that knowing that he was presiding over a nation that was sick of going and sticking our noses in every fucking thing that goes on anywhere in the world, and for some reason adding military might to it.
Yeah.
Like, that was specifically designed to be like, our policy is going to be pragmatic. We're not going to do anything we don't need yeah. to do. We're only going to do stuff that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is all anyone was trying to hear from him ever. Because right. people like her voted to send us into unnecessary wars.
Yeah.
And so people like him had to be like, you know what? Be assured, the problems are evolving. We can't know what they are. But we're not going to do anything stupid.
Yeah.
That's really all I want in a president.
I agree.
I mean, I thought that was the best line that he had in that cycle.
I agree.
Bar none.
Yeah.
That is, in this post 9/11 world of us having been at war for a zillion years and us just spending all of our taxes on bombing whoever and whatever else we're doing, all I want is someone who's just, like, not trying to cause trouble.
Yeah. And I know.
Not trying to cause trouble is already pretty difficult when you're the United States of America, because you have already, you're, like, sort of already a person who's caused trouble.
Yeah.
You're, like, a troublemaker, a known troublemaker.
Yeah.
It's hard to change the reputation.
And I think that this interview, I think, goes back to a point that you and I have been making now for years, is that when she has to, she didn't have to do this, she probably shouldn't have.
She should not have done this.
When she has to start saying what she actually thinks, and one thing I will give her is I think that she actually thinks this.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
I don't think she's posturing here in any sort of way.
It's certainly not garnering favor with anybody to say that shit.
That's it. I just, like, as soon as she starts talking, everybody in the base remembers that they don't like what she says when she talks.
Yeah. That's every time she opens her mouth.
That's the problem.
Her silence as Secretary of State was the greatest thing that ever happened to her, because she didn't have to say a damn thing.
I know. Everyone loved her when she was smiling with everyone. Yeah.
That's
really, dancing. Remember when she was dancing with those Africans
over there? It's
real
easy to be popular when you're just dancing and smiling all the time.
That's what she does.
Yeah. Once you open your mouth and it turns out you're still a warmonger.
Right.
Everyone's like, oh, wait a minute. The reason we didn't elect you the first time was because of this very issue, and now you have unnecessarily brought our attention to it.
Right.
With your best friendship with John McCain.
What an idiot.
Yeah. If you keep hearing that noise, it's because I have a ridiculous reminder set on my computer that goes off on Sundays to remind me my life is falling apart. So, I don't know how to turn it off. Every time that I've tried to turn it off on my computer, it's resynced with my iPad somehow and gone back on. So we're just dealing. We're just moving forward. Just at a certain point, we're going to have to stop interrupting the podcast every time that happens to turn it off. In any case, moving on.
Yes.
Gaza, there was a ceasefire for the last few days in Gaza.
So close.
We got real close.
Almost had it.
The ceasefire expired on Saturday.
It
fell apart early. It fell apart on Friday. It fell apart not that pretty late in the ceasefire. I mean, for what's been going on.
It lasted longer than the two hours that the last one lasted. Yeah.
It got broken by Hamas, who started firing rockets again. They claimed that they were firing rockets because Israel walked away from the negotiating table for the ceasefire agreement. So they were sort of like, why are we still having the ceasefire? Apparently, the clashes are a little milder than they've been now that we're back.
Because
at this point, no one knows why we're still having them. So everyone's just sort of like half-heartedly kind of firing rockets and bombs.
I guess we'll send a rocket over there.
I guess we could bomb. I don't know. It seems like a rocket came from there. Let's bomb over. We'll bomb over there. That's fine. Everyone's just sort of like not sure what the plan is now. When I was listening to Slate's podcast, they have their political gab fest or whatever about this. And they were sort of like, you know, like there was, you know, people who were sort of like coming in on both sides of what, you know, should be done about Gaza. And then there was one guy who was like, well, this is just a fucking mess. Like, the West Bank is less of a mess. And this is, there are specific steps that Israel could be taking to alleviate what's going on in the West Bank and stop causing trouble over there. Because they're not being nice to the West Bank. And the West Bank really hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
Like, they are trying to cooperate and Israel's not letting them.
Yeah.
This is just like a fucking shit show because they have marginalized these people to such a degree that there's no coming back from it. But anything that they do sort of willingly creates a humanitarian crisis, which is also not fair.
No.
So it's sort of like they've boxed themselves into a corner that is not going to be easy to get out of. So like, I don't even know, like they're just going to have to come up with a ceasefire that lasts as long as they can make it last until someone comes up with a more constructive solution than just like building walls and hoping nothing happens, nothing gets fired over them. Like,
I don't have much hope that that's going to happen anytime
soon. It doesn't seem like it does. I know, it's sort of frustrating. I mean, frustrating.
I mean, they both have demands of the other side that are just...
they're not going to give in to.
You know, I mean, Israel wants Hamas to totally disarm, and Hamas,
right, which is like,
wants those borders,
they're a militant group,
completely opened for them to be able... And it's just like... Both of those are non-starters, and I'm sure it wouldn't surprise me at all if Israel did walk out of those negotiations, because were like, well, screw you.
Well, they're not willing to make any concessions at all.
No, of course, but I have a feeling Hamas probably isn't either.
Well,
but, I mean...
Yeah, I sort of have a feeling that Hamas is sort of trying to posture because they know that they don't really have... They're not being treated the same way in the negotiations as Israel in the first place, because they're not a government, really.
Right.
Like, so it's sort of like a very touchy situation because everyone's feelings keep getting hurt in the negotiating process. So it's complicated. But in any case, it was sort of interesting to hear another podcast discuss it. Because I was sort of like, yeah, that is it's a really fucking big mess. Like,
yeah,
real big. Everyone should just stop.
Not going to happen.
I know. Well, it should happen. That's really the only solution here. This is going to keep happening until everyone stops.
Yeah.
And that is going to have to sort of include someone being the bigger person. And I don't see a terrorist group being the bigger person.
No,
so a nation that is supported by the entire Western world probably is going to have to be that.
Yep.
And they're not going to be. So that's unfortunate.
That's, yeah.
Therein lies the problem. In any case, Ebola is still
destroying
the universe.
Mm-hmm.
We're up to nearly 1,000 deaths in Africa.
Yeah.
And
it's like real panic.
Panic. In Liberia, there's protests forming because the government isn't picking up the bodies fast enough.
Right.
So it's spreading just because dead bodies are lying around dead of Ebola, and then people are getting Ebola from the bodies, and then more people have Ebola, and it's like the never-ending horrifying nightmare that I predicted when I first learned about Ebola in junior high school.
Terror. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there were protests in Liberia over the weekend because there were a bunch of bodies that had been lying in a town that was like about 50 miles from the capital.
Mm-hmm.
And then Guinea, where I think the outbreak actually started, closed its borders to Liberia and Sierra Leone, where the outbreak spread.
Right.
So now everyone is just stuck in an Ebola-infested nightmare.
Right.
Something like 40 health workers have died. And I think in Liberia, most of the hospitals have closed because everyone keeps dying in the hospitals.
Right.
So no one's even able to get treatment because no one can treat them because those people keep dying. And it's like,
right,
this is a nightmare.
Well, it's a nightmare. And also, you know, the fact that these countries sort of like don't have, I mean, the hospitals are closed, but even beyond the fact that the hospitals are closed, like a lot of these people don't have access to clean water. They don't
exactly.
have, you know what I mean? Like, because yes, Ebola is deadly. And even for someone who is healthy, it may kill them. But like people in these countries
healthcare.
Have no chance
yeah.
once they have Ebola, especially if they can't even get treatment.
No, exactly.
To
this
not
is,
die.
I feel like I mean, also, this is maybe scary enough that someone sends some shit in to give them the resources to fix this, whatever. I mean, this is a real humanitarian crisis in a way that I think we really probably could help.
Right.
Because, you know, one of the things people in these regions have been pointing out is, like, it shouldn't just be white people that get attention for having Ebola and die and don't, you know, get treatment for it. Like, it doesn't help white people if 1,000 black people have Ebola because it's still a thing white people can get once thousands of people have it. Like, it doesn't make sense to allow this to continue sort of unabated.
Right. No,
and it's,
it certainly doesn't.
It's just because they're sort of closing borders in Guinea doesn't mean it's not going to spread to more of the region. It doesn't mean that it's not going to somehow get on an airplane at some point. Like, it just sort of, it seems like we should, just because this is my personal nightmare, we should be doing literally everything. We should divert everything to stopping Ebola.
Right. I agree that this is obviously like a huge problem, and it could spread
Which is very easy to get.
Right.
Too easy.
And I do have an issue with how this is being covered, at least here.
Right.
Because I feel like the way that it's being covered here has been, obviously, with the two people who came home.
Right.
And then, you know, also there was a guy who was tested in New York City, remember? Right. And, like, he was, you know, didn't have it, but, like, had symptoms or something. But, like, I mean, I just, it could get here at some point, but, like, I just feel like it's been so sensationalized.
Oh, my God,
like,
I know.
In the, like, sort of, like, there's so much fear because people aren't properly explaining
here,
what's going
on. Everyone's acting like we're all about to get Ebola.
Right, exactly. Which
the
is
crisis
just, like,
is happening
in Africa
where thousands are literally having Ebola right now.
I think I mentioned this last week, but there was like a funny sort of like infographic online that was like, should you be worried about Ebola? And it was like, have you come in contact with someone with Ebola in West Africa or whatever? Yes or no?
Right.
Like,
answer.
If the answer is no, which it is for all Americans,
basically,
then you will not be getting Ebola anytime in the near future.
Yeah, it's
so
interesting.
It's like,
because the coverage has focused very heavily on like your risk of getting Ebola instead of the sort of actual where the humanitarian crisis is actually occurring and what we could do to help.
Right, exactly.
Because like that is how you prevent people from actually getting Ebola, is you stop a crisis before it becomes a crisis.
Right.
We're already in a crisis, but the crisis is in Africa, so no one wants to talk about it because no one likes to talk about crises in Africa.
We're just like having a panic attack that like two people are quarantined someplace in Atlanta that had Ebola.
Exactly.
Who I think are ultimately going to be fine, right? I mean,
I haven't heard any updates because we've been so busy hearing about how we're going to get Ebola.
That the people who have it, we don't care about the people who have it.
No, screw it.
That's irrelevant.
Those are the annoying people that brought Ebola to us, making us worry that we now have it.
Right.
We can't care about them.
No. Nope.
Or apparently any of the 1,000 dead in Africa, but we can care a lot about whether you're going to get it on the subway.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a little bit.
CNN having a real field day with
about
this, by the way.
Things you can get on the subway, which is bed bugs.
Oh, God. Yeah, but we'll get there later.
We'll get there later.
Oh, boy.
Meanwhile, also, Ukraine is still a mess.
Mm-hmm.
Surprise.
Yeah. That's our update there.
Done. Russia called a UN Security Council meeting on Thursday where they fake offered to deliver humanitarian aid to Ukraine, which is a sneaky thing that they do when they're trying to go to war.
Right.
They did the same thing in Georgia in 2008 where they pretended like they were going in with humanitarian aid and then had a 5-day war with Georgia, which is just the kind of thing they would do.
Yeah.
So Samantha Power was like, screw you guys.
Good.
Because basically said that if they attempt to go in there under quote unquote the guise of quote unquote humanitarian aid,
right,
it will be considered an act of war because this is what they're up
better.
To. We know better.
Yeah.
And NATO also, you know, NATO has said that they have like 20,000 troops at the Ukrainian border, so they're ready to invade.
Oh yeah, they're ready to take humanitarian aid over the border whenever they want in the form of guns and bombs.
In the form of guns and bombs,
tanks.
The things
they're
people really need.
They're going to take humanitarian aid in their tanks.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it is sort of, I mean, we're up to, I think within Ukraine they have 117,000 displaced people. Russia has said that 740,000 people have fled across their borders. This is like a million displaced people almost.
It's crazy.
Just from this chaos that Russia started in the first place, we think. But no one really knows because it's a mess.
Yeah.
And I think at this point we're just sort of like over dealing with the Malaysia flight, right? Like they at some point they had to exit again because they were like, well, we're not, there's like landmines everywhere. Like we're not trying to deal with this, and then everyone stopped talking about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, our PR campaign is working, apparently.
Yes, less migrant children.
That's
children
right.
Coming out. Well, our PR campaign is either working or it was too hot to bother with in July because we had, for the first time in 2014, less people come in July, and it was a lot less. Actually,
it was like half as many people.
Basically. So, in July, 5,000 people came over and, like, 10,000 had come over
in
May and June, basically. So, I don't know. I mean, June was sort of the month where, like, we started, like, our full court press down there, like, with, like, you know, like, op-eds in their papers and, like, you know, Biden went down there to basically, like, try and talk them out of, like, sending their children over the border. So either that's working or it was too hot.
Yeah, because it was, like, really, really hot in southern Mexico in the last month.
Yeah.
So it might have just been too... It might have not been worth escaping a deadly hellhole.
God, wait till the fall.
Right?
I don't know. But anyway, so they've also... I guess they also have more flights going back.
They're doing more repatriating flights.
So that also is sort of, like, I think, a big part of it, too, because they're just, like, getting rid of more of them now than they were previously.
And
I got a better system to send them back.
Now that we're really panicking about it, I'm sure that the message has gotten transmitted that the U.S. is sort of, like, paying attention.
Right.
Because before, it was this crisis, but no one was really talking about it, so everyone was like, oh, that's, you go to the U.S. Right. Now it sounds like we don't want people, so now...
And we were keeping all of them.
Right, yeah.
So,
I mean... So it was working.
Yeah, exactly.
But now it seems like everyone is sort of like, oh, they're not that friendly up there.
Nope.
Maybe they're going to Canada instead. That's where I would go.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's cold up there, and it's hard to get to.
It is.
But once you're there, like, it's harder to send you back from Canada. Because, like, they're so far away from everything. Uh-huh.
And they're too nice up there.
They're nice. They're very polite up in Canada. I feel like they're probably just like, oh, welcome to Canada. Would you like healthcare?
Probably.
And then you're like, yeah, I would love some. And then everyone then you get to go and live in a country where no one locks their doors and everyone has guns, but they don't shoot each other, mysteriously. Just a happy, boring land of Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, in election news.
Oh, boy. I love this.
This is
so good.
This is what we wish all the news was.
Oh, I know.
I don't really even want to be talking about international news ever, because I want this to only talk about stuff like this.
Right, and this is the story that really keeps on giving. I mean, who would have thought that a primary that was over with months ago, we would still be having to report news on? But Chris McDaniel, down in Mississippi, is trying to get the results thrown out and have the Republican Party of the state name him the nominee for the Senate down there, because Thad Cochran... had black people vote for him.
Yes.
Basically. I mean...
Yes. The race baiting.
He was race baiting.
Yes. Race baiting.
And they also...
That's what it's called in the GOP when you have black people that vote for
vote,
you.
Vote. Right.
Period.
Exactly.
If black people are voting, that's race baiting.
Yeah. Because he was quoted, he said, "We saw despicable acts of race baiting." Which is like, what?
Campaigning to say, you know, I'm crazy, but I'm not as crazy as this guy.
Right.
And you don't have anything to lose by voting for me.
Right.
So, why not?
And you know that I'll win if I get the nomination, because you're Democrat.
It's nobody.
Has no prayer.
Exactly. So why not? That's race baiting, apparently.
That's race baiting.
Making a reasoned argument, too.
It's also voting irregularities. Because the McDaniel campaign says that they have, that they're submitting 250 pages of affidavits detailing voting irregularities, which, again, I think are probably
just black
the irregularities
people voting.
Of black people voting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we posted earlier this week an article about a study that went and looked for actual instances of voter fraud. In the last billion votes cast in America,
like
there are only 13 instances, like credible instances of voter fraud, and maybe like 200 like that they looked into even, that they even had to look. Like, there is no voter fraud going on in the U.S., so voting irregularities, not a thing.
No, they don't happen.
Unless, I mean...
Certainly not 250 pages worth in a Mississippi Senate primary.
No, not at all. It was pages and pages detailing the votes cast by
black
people. Seeing
black people at the polling places.
Yeah, exactly. And they were like, you're not supposed to come here.
No.
This is Mississippi.
Come on.
Like...
This is a Republican primary in Mississippi.
How dare you try to vote, which is your right and your civic duty as an American citizen. Yeah, how dare you?
Yeah.
That's 250 pages. And are they still paying $15 an instance of voting fraud or whatever they were doing?
But this is
I
know, right? But this is all probably a part of the war on white people that's currently going on.
Yes.
If you haven't heard, that's happening.
You might not have heard, because if you don't listen to Laura Ingraham and don't care to hear Mo Brooks from Alabama talk about anything, you might not have heard yet. But we're here to tell you about it.
Yeah.
Mo Brooks is an Alabama Republican, as you... Mm-hmm. As I just said. He went on Laura Ingraham's show and said, he's talking about the immigration battle and how it's made the GOP look like a bunch of racist idiots, which it has. He said, "This is a part of the war on whites that's being launched by the Democratic Party.
Oh, my.
And the way in which they're launching this war is by claiming that whites hate everybody else. Hmm. It's part of the strategy that Barack Obama implemented in 2008, continued in 2012, where he divided us all on race, on sex, greed, envy, class warfare, all those kinds of things."
Well, that's not true.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what...
Right. We're not divided on those bases, according to him. It's just that white people are being accused of things. Yeah. Well, we're just discriminating against white people.
There's just such a long history of,
it's tough out there for white people.
I mean, it really is.
It couldn't be harder.
Yeah. Especially in Alabama. I'm sure they
have
real
the
rough.
Responsibility for being in charge of everyone else, apparently, in Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
They have the responsibility of being richer than everyone. It is tough.
Yeah.
and poorer in Alabama. They have the responsibility of both voting against their own interests mm-hmm. and being richer than everyone else in Alabama. It can be really tough.
Yeah.
So, in any case, he was responding to comments that were made by a National Journal writer who said, who was on Chris Wallace on Sunday and was talking about how the GOP is basically alienating the fastest growing voting bloc in the country
right.
by not, you know, by being the party of white people, by being the party, you know, against immigrants, by being
right.
a party that can't abide by black people voting. Yeah. Like, by doing the things that they do, they basically are cutting themselves out of the fastest growing yeah. voting bloc. Even Laura Ingraham told Mo Brooks that his remark was a little out there.
Like, if once Laura Ingraham is telling you that, you've hit rock bottom.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
If you're not making sense to Laura Ingraham,
he needs to set something on his computer to give
sense.
Him a reminder that he's hit rock bottom.
Exactly. That's so true.
Much like you do.
Much like
yeah.
I do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know. And I haven't even gone this far.
No, you haven't.
I'm not this rock
bottom.
You're
doing bottom. Great in comparison
to Mo Brooks.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, it's don't feel too sorry for white people, because they are getting back on their feet. The GOP has been strategizing up a storm about what to do about the next election cycle.
And they've got great plans.
They want to have all sorts of plans because they know that they can't go into the election having literally no idea what to do aside from block
right.
votes. Because once you're in the majority, you can't just block things anymore.
No.
You got to have ideas.
Right. And they're trying to become the majority party, and they know that they sort of have a shot at it. So they're
right.
all trying to pull themselves together and remember how to govern.
Right.
Because they're not, haven't been doing such a bang up job of it, at least
no.
in the House, certainly.
No.
And if they take back
and
over the Senate, they're going to sort of
all
like,
you've got is blocking
they're going to have to realize that they're going to have to pass some things. And this sort of was my point last week when I was like,
yeah.
maybe we just let them have it because they're not going to know how to do anything. And I think they're concerned about that. It's a, like, once you're a party that's
that
concerned that you've forgotten
how to govern,
don't be voting for those people.
No.
Like, that's just not a great plan on
a
your part.
Terrible
it's
strategy.
A terrible strategy. But, like, they're out there and they're, like, you know, they're trying to think of things that they know that they can pass to, like, prove that they're the governing party.
It's not a lot of things.
And it's not a lot of things, and it's also the things that they are could not be cared less about at, like, the current juncture of, like, where
yeah.
the country is at right now.
It's not things about things that people are on people's minds.
No, nobody's caring about these. These aren't actual voting issues.
No.
So if this is their plan to run on, then
they're going to run on
God bless them.
Medical equipment taxes and Keystone
mm-hmm.
Pipeline votes?
No.
Like,
and a change in the definition of full-time work in the healthcare law from 30 hours to 40 hours, so you have to work more to get healthcare, like, that's going to make everybody really happy, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
that's,
like,
that's how you get businesses to love you. It's not how you get votes to be cast in your
no,
favor.
No.
Human beings aren't benefiting from that. So that's
no.
not a policy that anyone wins by.
No, not at all. So anyway, that's their master plan to prove that they can govern, is to pass those
right.
things.
So
yikes.
That's everything that they can say yes to currently.
Right. Right. Well, and the other thing that they're trying to do is the party leadership is trying to be, like, very clear with the Tea Party and some of the, you know, the loony wing of their party, basically, that they're going to have to either
cooperate.
Give in or cooperate, or they're going to have to realize that they just can't be sort of like the 30 or 40 people in the House who are, like, harpooning everything, because, like, if you want to get anything passed, they're going to have to sort of, like, maybe not get everything that they want, but they're going to have to prove that they can do something and sort of just, like, move the ball down the road.
Yeah.
So, like, and that is one of the main reasons why they've been so hell-bent on making sure that these Tea Party people don't win these
primaries,
because they sort of
they don't want the same thing to happen
they don't
in
want
the
same,
Senate.
Right, especially if they take it over, because, like, then they've really killed themselves, because they've
yeah.
got too many people who can sort of, like, you know, shoot the whole thing down, basically.
Yeah.
So they've been really sort of, like, you know, the establishment has been really out there more than they have previously in trying to, like, stamp out these Tea Partiers. Like, you know, Lamar Alexander just won his Tennessee primary, and he was sort of, like, thought to be, you know, maybe
in danger
at one point, and also
Pat
that guy
Roberts.
From Pat Roberts from Kansas, who's another. Those two are considered sort of, like, you know, more pragmatic Republicans. I think they're both still
they're
probably crazy
loon bags,
but, the
but they're
yeah.
loon bags who I think maybe understand the conceit of being
right.
in government, which
and
is that
both,
you have to cooperate.
Right. And they're
a
both
little.
Sort of like old timers,
yeah.
so they sort of, like, on some level, like,
Lamar
Alexander crazy,
remembers
but
a time when the Republican Party was at least
right.
sort of cooperating.
Exactly. And the other thing that they really feel like they need to do and is a thing that they can do without having to have 60 votes in the Senate, too, because
right.
you can pass budgets without having to do that.
But it's not,
like,
a thing that they can do as people.
No, well, and this is the problem, because they want to pass a budget, and you hear them out there a lot talking about how the Democrats haven't passed budgets, and they, you know, you hear about Paul Ryan's budget, and everybody's coming up with a budget or whatever,
right.
but, like, they are running on trying to balance the budget, but they they can't do it. So it's going to be a real conundrum for them. Because the problem is they don't want any new revenue at all, because that's taxes. Right. They don't want any taxes. But they also want to give the Pentagon more money. But if they're going to give the Pentagon more money and not raise taxes, they have to somehow, the CBO has said, get $5 trillion out of the budget over the next 10 years. Which you can't do without pissing
everyone off.
Like you're cutting most government programs at that point. Yeah. Like once you're cutting $5 trillion,
exactly, including programs that normal people rely on, not just
Social
programs
Security, Medicare,
that disenfranchised,
like, I mean,
like
you're dealing with like huge sort of like social, you know, structures that we've had in place for like 50 years, yeah, at this point, and that's not
it's not popular with
good
people.
Good luck to them.
Yeah, no, it's and there's no way that a budget ultimately goes into effect with those kind of cuts in it after the sequester. Well, they're going to have to rely on something sneaky like that to get those kind of cuts in.
Well, and the thing is,
because that doesn't even sit well with a lot of Republicans.
Well, and I think the reason that they're scared about passing a budget is because, A, if they're the party who's in charge, they're going to have to.
Right.
And B, I think they most of, at least the people in the Senate and some of the smarties in the House, which there aren't very many of, know this. They understand this math. They're not real mathematicians in the Republican Party.
No, like, but they understand basic arithmetic.
Basic arithmetic. And you even, when we were having sort of like all of our budget issues sort of like over the past couple of years, you even had some sort of, you know, reasonable Republicans coming out sort of like admitting that there was going to have to be some sort of revenue coming in.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to realize that if they want to pass like an actual budget, they're going to have to raise taxes.
They're going to be the party of tax increases.
And then they're going to be the party of tax increases. And they're also going to have like the nutbags who do still remain in their party really sort of like shooting down any sort of reasonable chance of passing a budget that they have.
Yeah.
So.
No, they're going to be shooting themselves in the foot.
Oh, all over
left, right, and center.
Yeah.
The Democrats can just sit back and hang out.
Yeah, just let it happen.
Talk about anything.
Yeah.
Talk about. I mean,
just pop some popcorn.
The other thing that they were actually talking about on this Slate podcast was like, they sort of were like, once you have realized that the entire conceit behind your job has evaporated, like you are a person who's supposedly there to govern, but you know no governing is going on.
Right.
What do you do all day? What do they go in their offices and do? They're coming up with crackpot legislation. But if you're a Democrat, you're coming up with like the same legislation you've been proposing the whole time. You don't have to come up with anything new anymore because nothing's passed in months.
Right.
So like at this point, like, are they just like watching the game in their office? Like, what is their plan? What are they up to? Nobody knows.
Nope.
Like, it is literally like we are paying them to show up and then just like hang out because they have created a situation in which no one even expects to govern.
Right.
So no one's even trying because no one needs to, because there's 40 guys who are preventing any governing from getting done.
Yeah.
And those guys, no one wants to take responsibility for those guys.
They're working hard.
They're working very hard.
those 40 people
work very hard.
They do.
They
work harder than anyone else.
Harder than anyone else against the interests of everyone else. They're just like, they're like a 40-person army against
America.
500. Yeah, like they're... They are, like, somehow single-handedly fending off the entire rest of Congress.
Yeah.
It is not in the moderate Republicans' interest to have this kind of stalemate. They understand the basic conceit behind governing.
Right.
There are plenty of people who've been in government for, like, way too many years.
Yeah.
This, by the way, makes me feel like I would like to have... And I know this is sort of... On the face of it, this is sort of, like, the opposite of what we're talking about, but I would like to have term limits in Congress because I would like to be able to cycle these people out. I feel like this trend would end quicker if we could get term limits in there.
I think so.
And at some point, it would give us the impetus to sort of like have elections where people are like, well, I could get something done. And, and we could get some of these oldies out who are just going along with it because they're lazy, too. Like, I'm sick of these people.
Yeah.
Like, is Lamar Alexander helping anyone by being in there? No,
right.
Because he's still sort of allowing this to happen.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those oldies are just sort of like... They're making me nuts.
Yeah.
Everyone's making me nuts.
Well,
sick of these people.
I think that you may really have... We talked about this last week. There may be a real sort of, like, throw-the-bums-out election going on in 2014. Or everybody just says screw it and they don't vote.
I know that this would never happen, but I think if someone proposed term limit legislation right now, at maybe as a, you know, as something that we all had to vote, you know, like a proposition or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, they do that in New York sometimes. They keep trying to throw out term limits and everyone loves them and votes for them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we have them here.
Yeah, we have them here.
We passed them.
Everyone loves term limits of every party. It's one thing we can all agree on.
Yeah.
It's a thing that all Americans love term limits.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what party you belong to. It was a Republican idea, I think, initially. It was something that Democrats were against for a while because they were like, well, it sort of limits your ability to make a choice about who you want to govern and blah, blah, blah. Turns out everyone wants to throw the bums out all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone's a bum after a while. And like, once you've been in government for long enough, you become a bum.
But somehow incumbents keep getting reelected. I know. Seriously.
Yeah, because they have the organization of money behind them. Well, not because people don't want to throw the bums out.
Right.
Anyway, it's an idea I'm going to work on.
Good.
I'm not going to work on it. I'm just going to talk about it on the podcast a lot. More updates from Clive and Bundy.
Oh, good.
Were you wondering why he decided to have that April standoff with armed federal agents?
No.
Why he was trying to start a war with federal agents over a bunch of ranching fines that he was experiencing?
Was it Jesus?
It wasn't Jesus.
Oh.
It was some sort of Mormon god.
Oh.
Because he's a Mormon, so maybe it was Jesus. I don't know what...
Yeah, that's Jesus.
I mean, I don't know what the... I know that they have Latter-day Saints, too, don't they? Isn't that the whole point?
Yeah, they do.
Anyway, maybe it was Jesus.
Yeah. Well, he said the Lord.
The Lord.
That leads you, me. That takes
it's open ended, but
that's true. One of their.
It doesn't
words.
Take me to Jesus because I don't have any reason to know anything about anything. In any case, the Lord, whichever Lord you assume that this was, and I'm certainly not well versed enough in Mormon theology to know, directed him to do this. He said, and I quote, "The Lord told me, if he, the local sheriff, doesn't take away these arms from federal agents, we, the people, will have to face these arms in a civil war."
Oh, my.
He said, "This is your chance to straighten this thing up."
Oh, God.
So then, really, when the Bureau of Land Management...
Speaking through Clive and Bundy.
I know. Who knew?
I wouldn't have thought.
Prophet Clive and Bundy.
I know. I thought he only spoke to the prophet.
I know. That's
interesting.
Who knew? When the Bureau of Land Management ultimately backed down, because they were like, hold on, this is crazy, he took that as a victory. And was like, see, the Lord... had our interest all the, you know, knew the whole time. Had my back the whole time. He said, if the standoff with the Bundys was wrong, would the Lord have been with us?
Oh.
That's a good question.
I don't know. It is.
Then he said,
one we may never know the answer to.
Could those people that stood with me without fear and went through that spiritual experience have done that without the Lord being there? No, they couldn't.
Is that what that was? A spiritual experience?
I would argue that they could have. Like, I would argue that that's...
threatening to shoot down federal agents is a spiritual experience? Mm-hmm. Interesting.
In America, that's considered a spiritual experience.
Yes, it is.
That's gun lovers that we are. Uh-huh. That's about as spiritual as it gets.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Meanwhile, speaking of crazies...
oh, God. This is good.
This is the greatest story of the week,
I'm
pretty
sure. This
is
coming from a Democrat, too, by the way. So
Tennessee has a tradition, by the way, of having the wrong Democrats. Because in 2012, they disowned their U.S. Senate candidate because he belonged to a hate group.
That's right.
So, like, already they're in a weird place at the Tennessee Democratic Party.
Right. Yeah, they're doing weird things there. They've chosen this guy, Charlie Brown, by the way, to be their Democratic nominee for governor. Now, he's crazy. He did an interview with Mother Jones, which is.
A weird choice
weird
for him.
Weird outlet for him, considering what we're going to tell you, that what he told to Mother Jones.
Right.
Because he said his primary goal as a governor would be to, quote, put the Bible back in the school.
Like all famous Democrats.
Sure.
He's there to put the Bible back in the schools.
Some Democrat has to.
That's right.
Right? So, and he also said of their current governor, Bill Haslam, the Republican, that he would like to put his butt in that electric chair and turn it on about half throttle and let him smell a little bit.
This is... so oddly specific and uncomfortable.
Yeah, he's thought about this.
He's like, I don't want to kill him.
No.
I'm just going to turn it on halfway.
Right. Let him
smell himself cooking. Like, ugh.
I know.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
Also, what is Bill Haslam like if this is what their Democrats are like?
I don't even want to know. Right? Because this is a way to get Republicans to vote for you.
Sure. This is the right way to get Republicans to vote for you. This is what you say.
Yeah.
You talk about murdering people. You talk about putting the Bible in schools. Republicans love that shit. Who are the Democrats in Tennessee?
I don't know.
That he is trying to appeal to here?
I don't know.
It's a confusing demographic.
It is.
He rose to prominence by writing letters to the editor, to local papers, by the way, which leads me to believe that Tennessee is some sort of weird dark version of a Norman Rockwell painting. It's like, that's like very folksy, but like in the scariest possible way. Like, this is how Democrats are rising to prominence in Tennessee. They're writing letters to the editor about their goals.
Was Al Gore from Tennessee, by the way?
I think so.
He was.
But Tennessee is a weird place.
It must be.
I mean, it's got to be. That's Tennessee, I mean, and I don't think that their Democrats have ever been, like, super awesome down there.
Right.
It seems like they've maybe taken a dark turn here in the last few years.
Well, you have to be, definitely a dark turn. You have to be a moderate
Right.
At best. Yeah, I think Harold Ford Jr. is also from there, and he's basically a Republican.
Yeah, like they're sort of like Joe Manchining around. You know, like, they're those people.
That's it. Yeah.
That's one of those states where to be a Democrat, you have to be a Republican.
Right.
However,
yeah.
Usually as the Democrat that's a Republican, you're more of a moderate Republican. That's sort of the distinction. If you're a Democrat from a Republican state, you're a Republican, but a moderate Republican.
Yeah.
This is not moderate.
No.
Putting the Bible back in school, aside from meaning that you don't understand the basic precepts of the Constitution, is troubling because it doesn't even bear any resemblance to anything that Democrats are trying to do anywhere in the country. It has no relevance to their platform whatsoever. No. And cannot, especially as your primary goal.
Right.
That's all he's up to. He doesn't care about... He's not even like a Republican. Right. He's not talking about...
Jobs for Tennessee,
jobs,
maybe?
Deficits or whatever other Republicans are talking about. This is a man who's going to get into the governor's, you know, the governor's mansion and then sit down and be like, we have got to get religion back into the schools.
And half executing people.
And half execute our current governor. We've got to get those things done. Who cares?
Clearly he's in favor of the death penalty, too, which is also
not a great Democratic ideal,
no.
Maybe in Tennessee it is.
Must be.
It's certainly not something the Democrats are coming out against enough.
No, it's not.
So, at least they know that. And it's probably because guys like this are calling themselves Democrats.
Probably.
Don't let him be in your party, by the way. Find anyone else.
Yeah.
You can't just run in the Democratic primary because you're in the mood. Like, somebody has to be there to be like, you know what? It doesn't seem like you really are a Democrat.
No, we have to stop you.
You gotta be stopped. The party leadership, if they're busy pulling things behind the scenes for everyone else in the country and getting us a bunch of moderate nonsense talkers elected, they could at the very least keep these jokers out of the party. Like, come on. Anyway, speaking of worst fears coming true.
Oh, man.
Imagine that you're in the glorious metropolis of New York City. Riding the subway because you don't have to drive because it's the greatest city on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And just trying to get, you're on the east side, you're at City Hall, and you're just trying to get uptown. So you get on the 456. You might get bed bugs, turns out.
That's what's happening.
Turns out once you're on those trains, you might also get bed bugs.
Interestingly enough, there's no beds on these trains.
No beds. Also, bed bugs.
No fabric really of any sort.
Bed bugs like to hide in wood. Like, that's sort of, like, they hide in, like, the wood of your bed frame and stuff like that. And,
not
like, crevices
either.
And stuff like that. There's just, like, plastic and metal on trains. Like, I'm trying to figure out where the bed bugs are hiding.
Are they mutant bed bugs?
Maybe.
That's even a worse
thought. They initially were reported to be on 4N trains, which is concerning enough. But at least those mostly are being used by people in the outer boroughs.
Okay.
So they're not as dangerous to my home.
Sure.
But that's troubling because... You don't, those are long train lines. The end takes a long time to get where it's going. You don't want to be riding on a bed bug train for that long. But one of the busiest trains in the city is the 6, because the 6 is the only train on the east side. So everyone who's commuting to the Bronx or to the Upper East Side or anywhere on the east side takes
J-Lo.
The 6.
She was
J-Lo
on the 6.
Spent a lot of time on the 6, you might remember. Yeah. But like the west side has a few trains that run up and down. They have like a main one, but there's a, you know, the C also runs uptown or whatever.
Okay.
The 456 is the only train on the east side. That's why they were trying to build that Second Avenue subway. The 456 is a madhouse at all times. It's fucking insane over there.
Oh, no.
If I'm on the east side and trying to get home, I will walk to the west side and take another train because I do not like being on the 456. It is too crowded. In any case, after the N train debacle, where 4 N trains were taken out of commission to be fumigated, the Daily News reported that the 5 was also taken out of service.
Oh, no.
Because a rider saw a bed bug falling off a homeless man. Then, recently, some guy from Brooklyn named Hector Berrios told the Daily News that he had spotted and killed a bedbug on the 4 train on Friday.
Oh, no.
And then sent the paper a photo.
Oh, God.
It's only a matter of time before the 6 gets caught. And the 6 is where shit is happening. People are on the 6. The 6 is like a train you can't breathe on.
Oh, God.
I don't want to know what happens once it makes it to the 6. That's concerning.
Disaster.
Then everyone's at risk.
God, I thought we had, like, rid
ourselves of
bedbugs.
I thought we were done with this problem.
City,
New York City had that big bed bug outbreak.
Yeah.
I'm sure people still have bed bugs
I'm sure.
I mean, that's what's happening in places. But, like, it was for a while you had to worry if you were, like, in a JCPenney's you were going to get bed bugs. Like,
right.
Anywhere you went.
And, like, people, like, the hotels had to, like, say whether they'd had, like, infestations. And, like, people who were traveling there were, like, always trying to, like, find out whether they were staying at safe places and stuff. You know what I mean?
And here,
like,
we are now.
Yeah.
Bed bug.
Years later.
The trains. Mm-hmm. They found them in employee lockers, too, in, like, Coney Island and somewhere, which is concerning because now employees are getting bed bugs.
No.
I don't even want to know. Okay. In any case, we have more updates from USAID's wacky efforts to overthrow the Cuban government.
It's just ridiculous.
If you thought that their Twitter war was not ridiculous enough,
right?
We've done you one better.
God, This is just crazy.
This is too bad because USAID is supposed to be a humanitarian organization that does things like provide medical care to other countries and stuff like that. And that is what we would like them to be.
But instead of doing that, we're
Funding covert operations in foreign countries.
And using the medical care as like a front, basically. Yeah. Because what we found out this week is that they're using HIV prevention workshops there as like fronts to
like sneak young government operatives in and try to recruit people to overthrow the Cuban government.
Right.
Like, come on. What in the world?
Don't do that.
Don't do that. First of all, it's curious that they would, like, if I were Cuba, I would be like, okay, U.S., we don't need your HIV conference. Because Cuba has nationalized medical care.
That's true.
And they don't have the kind of AIDS problem that a lot of developing nations do. Because they really do medical education there, and they have medical treatment available. So while I assume that it's probably, if you have AIDS in Cuba, it's probably pretty shitty because they probably can't afford medicine for you. It's people know about how you get AIDS and don't spread it.
Sure.
And condoms are available there. Things like that are, you know, everyone's having a lot of sex in Cuba, so condoms have to be available. But they have condoms available everywhere. So whatever. This is not like a major epidemic in Cuba.
Got it.
There's not like a big AIDS epidemic. So already I would be suspect of USAID coming in there trying to set up HIV prevention workshops.
Right.
But turns out they were right to be, because they were recruiting random teenagers to go in there and talk to everyone about overthrowing the government at these conferences, and they didn't even tell the teenagers that they were really, like, doing something risky.
Right, well, and that's the
thing. They were not honest with the teenagers.
Because they weren't honest with these teenagers, and also, like, you know, Cuba is fairly good at anti-intelligence.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's
sort of,
like,
they've had a lot of practice.
That's a thing of theirs.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can't just sort of, like, go around Cuba.
These are so
just sort
sloppy,
of, like,
these efforts. You've got to be smarter there. You got to be smarter.
Yeah.
It's not just some rinky-dink nation that's never had to deal with foreign operatives spying on them.
No.
Cuba
constantly.
Cuba finds spies and arrests them. Like, that is a thing that they're up to all the time.
One of these people
They arrested
in jail.
One of these people. Remember when they rounded up 75 spies that they had found?
Yeah.
A lot of those spies were Cubans who had been recruited by the U.S. government and given weird, like, night vision goggles and things like that to, like, go snoop around in Cuba and do God knows what. Like, Cuba is up to finding these people. They're not afraid to find you if you're spying for the U.S.
No.
So, in any case, one of these people has already been arrested in Cuba.
Yeah, and he's in jail.
And he's in jail.
Still.
Right. It's done terrible things for the reputation of USAID, which now seems like they might be up to sneaky things when they come in to try to help you solve your AIDS crisis.
Right. Patrick Leahy, who chairs the committee who sort of, like, appropriates their money, is like, it may have been good business for USAID's contractor, but it tarnishes USAID's long track record as a leader in global health.
Yeah, which is what they're supposed to be doing.
That's what they're supposed to be
doing. They're not supposed to be launching Twitter wars and launching weird secret front businesses in other countries so that they can, like, recruit operatives for covert missions in Cuba. Like, first of all,
come on.
Can it be over now? Do we care that much?
That's the thing that just, like, seems so weird to me.
This isn't some, like, prosperous nation that we want to overthrow.
And the other thing that's so bizarre about this is that when we were talking about the wacky Twitter war that they had gotten themselves into, no one really knew that they were up to this.
Yeah.
Remember, I think it was Patrick Leahy, actually, himself, who was, like, sort of really angry about this because, like, a lot of people didn't know that they were, like, getting up to this. Like, they had, like, hired this, like, PR company or something to, like, help them do it or something like that. But, like, they hadn't really, like, these are operations that, like, the CIA really should, like, sort of be doing, if at all. Like, USAID is not,
it's
like,
not the right
it's not a spy
forum
organization.
No.
And clearly,
they're not good at it.
They're not good at
it. So we should stop appropriating funds for them to work on this
stuff. We're on our second example of them not being good at this at all.
No.
So they should stop.
They're not professionals.
No.
They're professional humanitarian aid workers. Yeah. Which is, if they had just gone and done an HIV prevention workshop, I would argue it probably wasn't the nation that could most use their HIV prevention workshop. But sure, good intentions, why not? No one wants AIDS. But, like, this is just ridiculous. Like, I can't even with them.
I know.
And I can't understand why we're still even doing this.
I don't either.
Like, who cares?
I know.
This is an impoverished island in the Caribbean. I know that they have great natural resources. I know they've been trying to make a go of it for a while, and they've done a good job of fending off our efforts to be involved. Good on them.
Right.
Let them do it. Let them have it.
Even Obama.
Move on.
Obama defended this program on Monday.
Just like,
and, like, he, in 2008, sort of, like, ran on, like, new relations with Cuba. So it's like,
which is apparently the old relations again.
Right.
We're just doing it again. We're trying it a second time. A fourth, an eighth time. It's
This time with feeling.
Yes.
Right.
But this time with poorly prepared aid workers who are trying to somehow recruit government operatives as if they're a fucking intelligence organization, which they're not. They're just a bunch of teenagers. Like, stop it. The U.S. provides dissidents in Cuba with, like, a hilarious array of, like, sneaky spy equipment.
Really?
they give them like that's like they give them like night vision goggles and they get like they give them like weird equipment, which I'm sort of like,
what are they doing
like,
with it?
We're like a Boris and like, Natasha cartoon. Like
they're giving them toys, basically, exactly. Is what they're doing. Like, what expensive toys.
What are these people doing in the nighttime that they need night vision goggles for? How is that? Like, are they snooping around somewhere? Why would they need to be doing that?
I don't know.
Anyway, it's very curious. The whole thing is very curious.
It really is.
And on a final note,
oh man,
the NRA tried really hard to squash this story earlier in the week because everyone was talking about this. But it's only because they had this video with one of their commentators.
Dom Rasso,
who has a fake-sounding name. Uh-huh. Basically advocating blind people should carry guns. Blind people. People who cannot see what they're shooting at.
Yeah, he said every law-abiding blind individual should be able to have whatever guns they want. And if you disagree with that statement or you haven't thought it all the way through, you don't take your rights seriously enough.
I have thought it all the way through.
Me too.
I've thought about it quite a bit.
It didn't take long, actually.
Didn't take long to think
about it. I didn't have to marinate on it. I didn't have to sleep on it last night.
All sides of the issue taken care of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm still fairly convinced that blind people are not the demographic you want to promote having guns, as guns are deadly and you want to be able to know what you're shooting at.
But the NRA did come out sort of like, because he wasn't...
This was embarrassing for
them. He's a commentator for like some NRA blogs and things like that or whatever, but like he wasn't really necessarily like speaking for the NRA, like as a representative of the NRA, so they were sort of like, I don't really know about this.
Right.
Like, maybe this let's is at just least, pull that
if we think something this crazy, it's not something to talk about.
No, exactly. I know.
Keep that to ourselves.
But it's interesting that we found something that the NRA is maybe not in favor of.
I know.
Right?
And, well, it's something that most Americans aren't in favor of either.
No.
Although, there are Americans that are in favor of it.
Some of them are.
And that's a curious choice.
Dom Rasso is not alone.
He's not alone.
No.
Something like 16% of people surveyed said that they would support open carry permits for the blind.
Yeah.
Who are these people?
Yeah. Guess what state you can carry firearms in public if you're blind?
Not surprised to hear about this.
I am. Iowa. I am surprised to hear that.
I mean,
actually.
I guess, yeah, I sort of...
Like, in the scope of all 50 states, like, that's 50 the states, one
that's
state.
That's
like,
true.
No, it has
I was
to be.
Thinking
you think it's Texas,
the
right?
And pairing Texas, of you Texas, too, you can do it. I was thinking you were going to say Texas.
Oh, no.
Iowa was a little bit shocking. Not, I guess, as shocking as it would be in a more like, populated state.
Right, like California.
Right. Like, there's reasons that there are strict gun laws in states with major urban centers, and it's because people in major urban centers aren't trying to be shot all the time.
Right.
In a place like think of, like, Western Iowa. Like, you could have a blind person carrying a gun there. They might never see another person.
Yeah, that's Steve King country.
Exactly.
Over there. So that's not totally shocking.
It's not totally shocking. They have pockets where I'm not surprised. I'm surprised to hear the whole state of Iowa both passed gay marriage as one of the earliest states to do that, and then also has open carry permits for blind people.
Oh, God. Speaking of Steve King, did you see that video of him this week? We didn't
no.
talk about it. But, so he was at, I think he might have even been at the fair. I can't remember the fairs going on. Oh, also the
fair's
Warren,
going on.
The fair's going on, and the Ready for Warren people were at the fair, too, by the way, like passing out literature and trying to get people signed up. So that's exciting news. But anyway, he was with Rand Paul, which, like, Rand Paul, like,
don't be
going with around
him.
With Steve King. But they both sort of, like, had, like, this terrible incident because they were approached by some dreamers.
Oh, no. Oh, I did see
this. Yeah, did you see this? Yeah.
Yes.
And so
awkward.
Yeah, they came up, and, like, Steve King and Rand Paul were sitting at a table, and they were, like, eating or whatever. And, like, they're directing it at Steve King. Rand Paul is just, like, sort of sitting there, but they're like, you know, we're a dreamer, we know that you want to, like, get rid of, like, the Dream Act and blah blah blah, and she's like, I'm a graduate of Arizona State University or whatever, and Rand Paul gets up and just leaves, like, immediately. He just walks
just, like, not trying
away,
to be here.
Claimed later that he had another interview to go to, but he literally just, like, in the middle of this conversation that they are having, like, with Steve King,
just
he's sitting,
like,
directly across the table from him, leaves, exits.
Yeah.
Stage left.
He's a man who knows where he doesn't want to be photographed.
Exactly. And Steve King, meanwhile, is, like, telling her how great her English is. She was born here, by the way. Like, I mean, that's what... He clearly doesn't even understand, like...
The concept.
Who the dreamers are, basically.
Right.
Like, that's the whole thing, is that they have lived here all of their lives and have been educated here. And, like... God, those two. I'm telling you. I'm sort of surprised at Rand Paul. Although, I think he probably...
I'm not surprised that he got up and left.
That was probably the smartest decision that he could have made.
I was going to say, that, if I were Rand Paul, might have been my plan of action. Because I didn't want to sit and talk to them about why I support deporting them to a nation that they've never spent any time in.
Well, and you also don't want to be seen with Steve King while
you don't
he's telling them that they have, you know,
wonderful English. The person who was raised in the United States.
Right.
Yeah, that's borderline that territory with that new congressman who told those two State Department people that like, addressed them as if they were India. Because right. they were, like, Indian-American. Yeah. And they were like, well, we will certainly direct those comments to the Indian delegation should they arrive. And it was, like, a woman who sounded like she was a Valley girl. Who, like that's, like, on that level of, yeah. of border, of, like, you can assume that level of insensitivity is what you're getting into when you're next to Steve King and a dreamer approaches. Like,
oh, man.
It certainly is not surprising to me that someone who graduated from college in the U.S. has good English.
Nope.
Shouldn't be surprising to him either.
No.
In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it.
We've done it. So, we will talk to you next week, first
we will
of all.
Indeed.
Have a good week doing what you do.
Yeah.
And we'll hopefully there won't be any more wars to report next week, but that seems unlikely.
It does.
Okay, bye.
Bye.